Hello and welcome to the next episode of ADHD Mums. Today we have Bessie Campbell here. How are you, Bessie?
I'm well, thank you. How are you?
Good. So a little bit about Bessie. Bessie is a late diagnosed ADHDer. She also has a combined presentation with autism and complex PTSD. Bessie has a two-year-old and two older stepchildren. She works full-time in the social services sector in project management and also coordination. This is going to be such an interesting episode. I can't wait. So the reason that Bessie is here today is because I put it out into a couple of the Facebook groups that I was just becoming aware that this podcast was focusing on a hyperactive version of ADHD. And the reason so is because that's how I present. Yes, I have a combined type, but I'm definitely more hyperactive. And I probably talk about that more in terms of cognitive hyperactivity and not being able to sit still, not being able to calm down and just going, 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 going. Like an eight-year-old boy, but just inside a female's brain. Imagine all that energy inside a brain rather than having the movement necessarily as being a part of that. So a few people emailed me and said, hey, Jane, I don't actually identify with this and listed the hyperactive symptoms. They're like, I actually have trouble completing tasks, getting started, et cetera, just doing the dishes is just so difficult. I don't know. Do you think I have ADHD? And then I became really concerned that I hadn't done enough on the inattentive side. And I also got a lot of feedback from the people on the podcast, and I always go off feedback rather than my own opinion, that people wanted to hear more relatable Aussie mum stories. You know, this podcast is not about showcasing celebrities. It's about regular Aussie mums who are battling it as we all are. So that is a bit of an overview about what it is that we're doing. Bessie, what made you, and I don't know if you saw it, did you see it in the Facebook where I put up the ad and then a few people put a couple of negative comments on there, which I actually hadn't experienced before. And I was like, oh, shit. So what they said was, I put the ad out and then they're like, Jane, I can't believe that you would ask an inattentive person to send an email to you to book in a time because they're inattentive and they're never going to do it. And the fact that you don't know that is offensive, which I was like, oh, wow, this is going in a negative direction. But what made you, being an inattentive ADHDer, actually send in the email?
I'm, as I said, late diagnosed. I'm at the very beginning of my journey of this diagnosis. And I think what I find helpful myself is knowing that I'm not alone in my experience. And because I don't know a lot of other mums who have autism or ADHD, and particularly ADHD. And so I guess I wanted to contribute to other people feeling as though they're not alone, because I find that helpful myself. And I'm interested in being involved in things like this.
Yeah, perfect. It was interesting because when I saw the comments, I was like, oh, I've already got five emails. So I just left it. So I really appreciate your time. And I think it shows a level of commitment considering your symptoms that you were here. So what did the diagnosis look like for you? Like, how old were you? Where did you go? How did it happen, kind of thing?
It was last year. So I was 30. How old am I now? I'm 37. So I had a baby 2 years ago. And since then, I was diagnosed with postnatal anxiety and depression, which in hindsight was probably a massive autistic burnout and overstimulation and just massive dysregulation. And that just sent me on a bit of a journey to try and discover what was actually going on for me. My sister has ADHD and autism, and so she talked about her experience a bit, and I was like, oh, I think that is similar to my experience. And my panic attacks had never really felt like what they look like on paper, and things just never really quite fit, even though I've had 8 intensive years of CBT around anxiety and depression. Things just never quite fit. There always felt like there was a little thing missing from those diagnoses and from the treatment. So I contacted a organization that was recommended to me to get an autism assessment initially, and said to the assessor, do you think it's worth me getting the ADHD? My sister's got ADHD. And she was like, oh, let's just start with the autism assessment and see how we go. And by the end of that assessment, she was like, yes, let's do the ADHD assessment. It's definitely worth your time. And yeah, then I got the report and it was all diagnosed. And then I subsequently saw a psychiatrist only in January this year and got a medical diagnosis and medication. That's
beautiful.
Journey. Yeah. So all spawned on by having my baby.
Yeah. And you know what? Don't you love the perfect storm of having a baby and getting a huge life-changing diagnosis and having no time to process, look after yourself? Not to minimize your experience, because I actually find babies to be more stressful than children, if I'm honest. I'm not a baby person. I'm definitely more of a child person. If I'm even that, I'm hardly Mother Nature. But I think when your kids are older and then they're going through their own diagnosis, it can be really difficult too, because you're like trying to get resources in because there's so much pressure on early intervention, and you'll be getting to that stage now. And then you're processing your own self and you're trying to get your own therapy, and it's just a bit of a mess. How did the medication go for you? Did you have to try a couple? Are you happy with what you've got, or?
I only just started in January and I'm having a review soon, but I'm just in a space of trying to figure out the cost benefit analysis, really, because I find it affects my sleep, but it does really help. But then a lack of sleep is a massive trigger for me in terms of other issues. So it's just about navigating the cost and the benefit and my priorities in that space. So I'm still navigating it. Definitely helps, but then it does impact me in other ways. Yeah, still figuring it out.
Do you mind what medication you are trying?
I'm taking dexamphetamine at the moment. I think it's the short acting one. So I'm supposed to take a dose in the morning and a dose at midday, but then I find that I'm not getting to sleep until 1 a.m. And then obviously with a 2-year-old, you're awake sometimes 5, 5:30, and it's just not enough sleep at all for me. Sleep is one of my major coping mechanisms, a lack of sleep, which is obviously why having a newborn really impacted me. Having a lack of sleep is really detrimental to my health and mental health. Yeah, it's just about kind of finding that balance.
Yeah, and that's really hard too. And I know a lot of people have said to me, and again, I'm not a medical professional, but that people that are autistic sometimes have much more sensitive systems to medication. That can be an impact too. Personally, I find a dexamphetamine at 12 p.m. not a problem, but other people are more sensitive. The other thing you can do is, I think some people take more dexamphetamine earlier, like they have a bit of a higher dose earlier and then they taper off quicker.
Yeah.
There's some timing stuff that you can problem solve with your doctor, or there's a long acting Vyvanse as well. Yeah. I always encourage people to try more than one, even though it's expensive, it takes a long time. If medication is available for you, I always reckon you want to explore all the options. Because, you know, you didn't come this far to then not try all the medications, and it's exhausting and painful and expensive. But it took me like a good, I think I was like 4 meds in before I found one that worked. So I'm always glad that I kept going, because sometimes people say, you know, I tried Ritalin and it didn't work, and then they didn't know there was anything else available. So I was trying to push on the podcast, keep going back, keep trying different things. There's lots of different ways to do it. Can I also ask you, you know how you were talking about your panic attacks earlier?
Yes.
Were you talking about maybe like a meltdown, like an internal meltdown? Like how, I would actually love to know how that looks in a mum.
Meltdown for me. Yeah. So these panic attacks, I think so. I have had actual panic attacks in the past, but there were things that were happening post that we were calling panic attacks, but they didn't fit into the symptoms of a panic attack. Just massive overwhelm and a feeling of just impending doom, and everything was terrible. Nothing was going to work. This is just nothing. No solution that's provided to me is an appropriate solution. Quite aggressive behavior, and then it usually ends in a shutdown. And so that was happening, and it had been called a panic attack on a few occasions by different professionals, but it just didn't fit into my previous experiences with panic attacks or the symptoms that are general for panic attacks. The sweating and the shaking.
The beating heart, and you think you're having a heart attack and all that stuff.
I wasn't thinking I was dying. It was just this feeling of nothing is ever going to be good again. I can't keep, and just any solution that was provided, there's a reason why that won't work. It was just a real overwhelm in what was going on, particularly in response to the baby crying and not sleeping. Like, they were my big triggers.
Wow. I'm just a little thrown, because I actually have experienced them myself. Yeah, and I've recently had the dual diagnosis of autistic and ADHD, and that's why I was asking, because I just was interested. And I actually sat in bed with my husband this morning, and I said to him something about anxiety, and he doesn't think he ever experiences that. I think he does, but look, he doesn't think he does. Maybe he doesn't know that it's not a normal feeling. That's how I always felt with anxiety. But I said to him, it's like impending doom, but no one's coming. There's nothing that's actually coming. It's just impending doom. The world is ending. The zombie apocalypse is here. But there's no way to problem solve it. It's just like this big black cloud that hangs around. And he just couldn't, I don't think he could quite get it, but actually what you were talking about is so real for me. It's like this just overwhelmed build, and then the cloud comes and it starts pouring, and then my husband will try to problem solve with an umbrella of some sort. And I'm just like, not interested. I'm just like, take your fucking umbrella. You don't get what's going on. And I just can't even accept help or see any reason. Is that similar?
Yeah, can't see reason. Nothing's going to help. Nothing's ever going to fix it. It's all going to be terrible forever. Why am I bothering? Yeah, and it can spiral to some really awful places as well.
Yeah, yeah. I said to Bessie before we started recording, I'd had a really awful 10 days. This is really resonating with me. How do you then move past it? Like, how do you do that?
I'm in terms of in that specific situation or in general?
Do you, if you're in it, let's say you've got the rain cloud out, right, and someone's trying to hand you an umbrella, are you aware at that point that, and I don't want to say it's not real because I know it's real for you, but are you aware that it is a meltdown panic attack kind of thing? And it's harder. You're not aware
not
at that
in the
point?
Moment. Not in the moment. Afterwards, in hindsight, yes. But in the moment, it's all very real. Like, it's reality to me. There's no space for, and this is why CBT and mindfulness, and no matter how much I persisted, it never was enough, because I remember saying to my psychologist, when this is happening, I can't access the mindfulness strategies. They're just not accessible. They're not there. When I'm in my everyday life, I can access those strategies and utilize them. But when I'm in this space, I can't, they're just not available to me. They don't exist. They've never existed. It's hard to explain.
Oh no, I actually get that. I'm loving this conversation. I can't believe we're recording. I feel like this is just for me. Yes, I feel like that too. Like hardcore. And then at the time you don't know, but then afterwards it wasn't real. But then so do you think that's connected with autistic burnout?
Yeah, I think it's all connected, particularly for me. And it's really hard, particularly for an example, when I went to my psychiatrist, he was like, okay, so how does the ADHD manifest for you or present for you? And I was like, A, I'm still very early on my journey and figuring out what it all means for me, but B, it all just intersects so much. I think it is all connected. I definitely have more meltdowns in the lead up to a burnout, of which there have been several since the baby arrived. And I definitely, like, sometimes I just have this shutdown where I'm just not accessible and just need to be under my doona, in the dark, in the quiet, to recover. Or, yeah, I think it's all intersecting, definitely.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that, because I bought my kids body socks. Have you ever tried a body sock?
No, I haven't.
Okay, so I bought my kids these body socks, and it's like a big sheet of material that's, I don't know, stretchy. And you put it on, it's like a hug, but without actually having anyone touch you. And it's like quite tight around. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I got one, like it was a freebie out of something, and I gave it to one of my kids thinking, oh, this, we should have just given it away. This is just going to end up in the bin kind of thing. And anyway, they loved it and fought over it. So you can imagine, oh my God, I need two more of this. This is insane. So I got two more. And the kids love them. Like, they wrap themselves on the couch in these body socks, and it's just like sensory, basically regulating. Anyway, so now they walk around with the socks on, right? The socks never come off now. Anyway, I got them body socks for their beds, where it's like basically a piece of material, the same size kind of material that kind of just gives them a sensory push all night, which is helping my son sleep through. Anyway, the other day I was feeling really stressed out, and I was like, I'm going to put on one of those socks. Put on one of the socks. I was like, oh, this is real nice. This is really nice. And then I looked up adult body socks, and I was like, I cannot believe I'm using my kids' body socks. Sitting here at my desk in my body sock, I was like, who am I right now? But yeah, anything to regulate, I think that stuff works actually.
Yeah. I'm definitely starting to explore more of that, because obviously being diagnosed with anxiety and stuff my whole life. That when I'm having one of these episodes, they'd be like, oh, go out and have a walk and get some fresh air. And I'm just like, the last thing I want to do is go out in the world. And I
know. And imagine you see a neighbor and they're like putting their bin out and they're like, hey, how are you? And you're like, oh my God. But no.
Just the space and the light, and all I want to do is be in the dark in a ball, basically. And people would always be like, go and get some fresh air, go for a walk. I said, that doesn't help me. So that was another thing that was like, I don't think these are panic attacks, because the strategies that people give me don't work.
And then it's what's wrong with me, because they don't work. So well done for getting a diagnosis, because otherwise you're doing therapy that doesn't work because the tools aren't right, because it's not the right diagnosis.
Or you get told that you're just being difficult by psychiatrists who are fed up with their treatments not working. Yeah, it's been a lifetime of medical gaslighting as well, which is
bad. I hear you. I actually looked up someone that I saw as a kid down in Tassie, and I was like, if he's still alive, I want to email that guy and ask for my records, because I was like, the amount of medication I was on at such a young age was really wrong. And I just would love to see what it was on I was on. But he died. So I was like, well, the world might be better off without him treating people. But anyway. Yeah. Okay. So let's go to inattentiveness, which is what the episode's about. But I just wanted to hear more about who you are and before we start going into the symptoms. Okay. Inattentiveness. Would that be your major symptom within ADHD? How does that kind of impact?
Yeah, I think it's a big one. And I think this is where the presentation of people with uteruses symptoms is so different. Is for me, if you asked anyone who I work with or my partner, whether I was disorganized or got distracted easily or didn't finish things, they'd probably say no, that Bessie's one of the most organized people I've ever met, and that I keep the household flowing and I'm in project management. But it's come at me putting in place incredibly rigid and strict routines and strategies and implementing these elaborate systems in my life to ensure that that everything works. And the second that one of those systems isn't followed or adhered to, things just fall apart. So for me, to manage it, it's a massive burden on my life and my energy and my well-being, and it's a huge impact, although outwardly it probably doesn't appear that way to anyone else, which was an interesting thing from my assessment. Was obviously my partner's asked to do the screening, and I do it, and our responses were so different, and I think that just spoke to the ways that it presents in women and how the diagnostic tools are just not up to scratch for us in this process. But luckily I had a person who was assessing me was incredibly understanding of that. But it does have a big impact on my life, and it takes an incredible amount of effort to mitigate the impact it has.
Do you use really complex systems to organize your time? I assume that you've got really complex scaffolding and systems behind you to achieve everything that you need to get done.
Yeah, if my calendar is linked with my partner's calendar, isn't with my work calendar, if things aren't in my calendar, they don't happen, down to travel time, chores that need to be done, everything is in my calendar. And that, I think I learned that strategy when I was an executive assistant years ago, because that sort of gave me that strategy of managing time and recording time for other people who are incredibly disorganized. So that was a big change, and that's something that I do religiously, genuinely and literally. If something isn't in my calendar, it doesn't happen. It disappears from my life. Like, it's not in my memory.
Totally.
It's
not a birthday party written on the calendar, or let's say one of the kids gets their fingers and just takes it off. I don't even remember I should have been there. At no point in the next few weeks do I think, oh yeah, Thomas's birthday was on Friday. I just don't even know who Thomas is. It's completely gone. Yeah, I hear you. It's not there. It's gone. It's done. I won't even remember I forgot.
Yeah, and this is the online one, so it's got reminders popping up everywhere. And because I've tried written ones and I just forget they exist, this is all online with reminders being sent to my phone. Yeah, as you say, everyone's birthday is in there on an annual repeat. Yeah, everything is in there. Go away on holiday, all the activities that we've planned are all in there. The travel time is in there. Everything. It's really elaborate. Things with keeping the house clean. We have a big magnet whiteboard on the fridge that everything is written on, and things move from column to column in terms of their urgency. So it's a bit of a sort of project management Kanban board on my fridge. And then that's been learned from a different job that I had in project assisting people with projects, that I learned that strategy and then I implemented it at home in my life. And I think the main thing, like with my work, is I need to be in a job that really interests me, that I'm incredibly passionate about, that I can hyperfixate on. Otherwise, I can't keep it. I don't keep it. I've had throughout my adult life, jobs would just, I'd leave them on a whim. I would just get bored and distracted and find something else. But now that I've found a job that I really enjoy, I'm incredibly passionate about it. It motivates me to turn up every day and to put a lot of effort in and keep going with it. But yeah, if it's a job that it doesn't interest me, I had one last year that actually ended up in a burnout and me leaving, that I was only there for 5 months because it just I just couldn't focus on the things that needed to be done. I couldn't finish things that needed to be done. I just felt like I was failing at it all the time because it just wasn't. It's hard to explain. I'm sure you understand, but it was just chaos in my brain the whole time. Yeah. So yeah, it does have a huge impact. And the way I manage it is elaborate. Yeah, strategies and systems.
Hey, that's so interesting. Here's a question for you. With being a mum, I reckon we have to be the most flexible people out there, right? Like, we have to be the most flexible person. We have got our own plans. We get a sick child, it's pushed aside. We have something we want to do, something else comes up, it's pushed aside. And that's not a good thing. That's just how mums seem to operate, out of guilt and self-sacrifice and martyrdom, which is absolutely, if you are not doing that, power to you. I want to be that person. So this is definitely not a behavior that you want to follow. But I think a lot of us suffer in this cycle. And then I was wondering, with being an autistic woman as well, how do you then be flexible when one of the autistic traits is kind of inflexibility? And I know that not all autistic people are the same, but it's just interesting to me how an autistic person who's supposed to be so inflexible can actually manage really out there situations.
I struggle, and I think definitely since it's been one of the things that I've struggled with since having the baby, because as you say, you need to be flexible, you need to roll with the punches, you need to put other people's needs above your own, and unexpected things happen. And I really struggle with that. And it has been a really tough battle. I think the thing that helps me with it, though, is just how much I love my son and how I want him to be happy and have a good life and have a good start in life. And I think understanding his needs, and I obviously did a lot of work after he was born. I did a circle of security course. I had a lot of help from professionals to understand child development and what he needs and to be able to, and how I can respond to his needs. I think that understanding, coupled with the love I have for him and my drive for him to have a good life, and to break the cycle of mental health issues that has run through my family as much as I can, that has given me enough drive to try to be a bit more flexible and let go of some of that rigidity that I have. However, then that does affect all these systems I have in place. And as I said before, when something isn't in the system, the whole system falls down. So it's a real, I'm still figuring it out, and it's ongoing, and it's going to be ongoing with a lot of support for a long time. But yeah, it's a real battle. And I think that that autistic part of my brain and the ADHD part of my brain are in this constant, all I can describe it as is this constant battle of rigid rules and routines that are needed to regulate me. And then just my brain being absolutely scattered and everywhere all the time and not being able to uphold these rigid routines. So it's this cycle. Yeah, so it's really hard and it's an ongoing work.
Yeah, because then you're in the routine and that's all lovely until the ADHD takes over and then you get bored. So then you want to change something, but then you can't cope with the change. I just think the cycle is so confusing. There's so many women I've spoken to that have been diagnosed incorrectly.
Yeah.
Do you think that the complex trauma diagnosis as well, because that can be really interlinked and confusing to figure out what is what, because autism, complex PTSD or PTSD and bipolar are often really confusing, those three. How are you comfortable with that CPTSD diagnosis? How do you think that plays in as well?
I think I'm comfortable with it. I think there's been a long history. Obviously, autism and or neurodivergence in general is very genetic. So there's a long history of dysregulated people in my family who didn't have the support that they needed, which obviously makes it very hard to parent. So there's a long history of trauma in my family, which we're starting to figure out now with all of these diagnoses in my family. Yeah, I am comfortable with the CPSD trauma given my childhood and adolescence. And I think it comes along as well with a lifetime of medical gaslighting, a lifetime of being completely misunderstood, a lifetime of feeling like you weren't enough, like you didn't fit in, and not having close friendships and wondering why. I think all of that kind of plays into that diagnosis as well.
Was that relieving to get those three diagnoses? Because they're pretty big. Yeah. This isn't, like a clinical anxiety. Oh, okay, you have anxiety. Those are three big diagnoses there that would have, how did that impact you hearing that? Were you relieved or angry? How did it look?
Initially, I was incredibly relieved. I felt like my whole life had been validated, like everything fell into place and I completely understood what had happened in my life. Although since then, since the diagnosis, I've moved into a place of identity crisis. I felt I'd lived with the diagnoses of anxiety and depression for so long. I knew who I was with those diagnoses and I'd owned it. I was an anxious person with a bit weird, a bit different to everyone else. And I had owned it and knew who I was and how to navigate the world as that person. But now with the autism and ADHD diagnoses, I don't know how to navigate the world. I feel like I'm a bit hyper aware of how I interact with other people and a bit over analytical of my behaviour. And yeah, I'm still working through that. It's a bit, yeah, just a bit of an identity crisis. And it's also hard to believe because I think we're told so much that you hear a lot of, oh, everyone's a little bit autistic or but you're so organized and all of those little microaggressions that are really invalidating, but I don't think people intend it, but it makes it hard for me to believe the diagnosis. And every now and then I'll see something online about someone saying, oh, this ADHD thing. And I'm like, oh, that's not something that happens to me. So it must be an incorrect diagnosis. It's a lot.
How do you go, though, having an identity crisis with having two stepchildren and a baby?
And that was another idea. Like, I think the baby coming along as well, I had a bit of an identity crisis because I never saw myself as a mum and I never wanted to have children until I met my partner and we talked about it and we talked about how it might look for us and we thought, okay, all right, let's do this. And then because I have had hormonal sort of issues my whole life, we were like, we better get onto it because I'm 36. I've been diagnosed with polycystic ovaries. We better get onto it. And it literally within minutes we were pregnant. And so I'd gone from thinking that it probably wasn't possible and being okay with that, but let's give it a go, to being pregnant. So there was an identity crisis in just being a mother alone. So it's been one long identity crisis, but I guess hopefully in the long run I'll be able to get the support I need and have a better understanding of myself and my needs. And I hope that in the long run this identity crisis will be beneficial to me because I'll be able to work through it and understand myself better and have better insight into myself and my needs. And that will be good in the long run for me as an individual and me as a mum, me as a stepmom, me as a partner. I think it's just about working through and finding the support I need and figuring out who I am now, which is who I've always been, but it's not who I've always seen myself as, which is confusing.
Yeah, no, it is confusing. It's just I find it difficult with such limited time and self-care time. When you talk about having an identity crisis, I so get it. I so get it. But then there's no time to have an identity crisis. Yeah. And any skerrick of a moment that you might sit, or not sit, but you might stand in the shower and just have a moment of peace to collect your thoughts is interrupted. Having an identity crisis is all you can't do it as a mum. Because there's no time. You might be having an identity crisis internally, but no one else would necessarily know that. And you've got no time and space to actually sort out any of your own emotions. And I think that's one of the things I really struggle with when there's just no time and space and you're taking your kids to therapies and things that they need. And then you're so burnt out by that. And you're talking about the coordinating as a mother. Absolutely. People probably would say I'm organized, but I think the toll to be that organized is so massive. And by the time my stuff comes around, I can't be bothered making a hair appointment. I can't be bothered getting any therapy myself. I can't be bothered driving to another place. If I have any moments of time off, I just don't want to drive and have to talk to anybody or have an appointment, or they'll go call and we'll do an intake or call. And it's the barriers to actually me ringing anywhere is so hard. And I feel like nearly everything's fucking halaxy. Oh, come on here and have an initial consult. And I actually rang someone before because I just had the shits. They just wouldn't give me any information until I booked this call. And I was like, I don't want to book and have another meeting. So I just called the mobile number and I was like, look, I just want to book some group art for my kid. When's your time? They're like, oh, we don't do anyone. We try to convert everybody to a art therapy appointment, which is $300 in the 15-minute phone call. And I was like, I'm glad we both saved each other some time because I'm not doing that. But I was just thinking to myself, how is this a NDIS provider that won't give out information unless you have a 15-minute phone call? Just shits me the world is not made for people that are neurodiverse.
Yeah, it's hard. I've been sitting with a referral to a pain specialist for 7 months that I haven't made the appointment yet. There are so many things in my life that I need to do for me, but I just don't do. I haven't had a haircut. I can't even remember how long since I've had a haircut, and I keep going, I need to get a haircut, but I can't make the phone call or send the message. And it gets to the end of the day, and I'm just like, I just need to go to bed because it's been 5 a.m. and then getting everyone to school and childcare, starting work at 8 a.m., finishing at 5. Then it's immediately walking out of my home office into the kitchen to get dinner on, bedtime routine. And then I'm just exhausted. Like, I'm absolutely exhausted. So yeah, I totally agree. It's impossible sometimes to have an identity. And I think a lot of it is internalized, which is going to be awful long term. I'm lucky that I have a flexible workplace. I can make those appointments during work time and then just make up the time elsewhere. However, when do I make it up? When I'm exhausted in the evening and I just want to go to bed. So it's definitely a juggle. And then keeping on top of social relationships and family relationships as well is really difficult. I just forget to call people. I forget to check in with people. I forget to organize things. It's a lot. And there is very little time to look after oneself. Yeah,
there is. And I think as well, some of that inattentive stuff for me comes in around stuff that's not about my kids. I can push through some of that inattentive symptoms for my kids, but then when it's for myself, I don't do it on purpose. I just never get around to it.
Yeah.
And then eventually it falls off the list somewhere and I'm like, oh yeah, I was supposed to go and get my hormones tested or a blood test, but I'm just, again, that's another appointment. It's another thing I have to go to. And sometimes it's hard to leave the house because all I seem to do is go to appointments for my kids and talk to people and check them in and fill in documents. So, you know, when I'm faced with doing that for myself, I'm just like, oh, I'd actually prefer not to do it at all.
Yeah. It definitely is until the issue becomes absolutely unmanageable, that it's really impacting me, that then I take action. Yeah. So that, like with the pain specialist, for instance, I've just had a spout of absolutely agonizing pain that nothing could combat. So that motivated me to book that appointment in. But anything else, like my hair, I just tie it up. You can wait.
You've
cutting
got
my
the
toenails.
Mum bun.
I'll just push on. Yeah, it's definitely a battle. And it's made a lot harder by, having kids. As you say, they've got the needs and you prioritise those, and then there's just no space left.
And then we all wonder why we're depressed, anxious, burned out, exhausted, agitated with our partners, feeling like we've just had enough, maybe a bit aggressive. I got on the horn yesterday at pickup. There was some person that was like blocking all the areas, all the roads, like literally no one could get into the car park, out of the car park, or along any of the roads, because this woman was just sitting in the middle of the thing and the pickup line wasn't moving. So it wasn't like it was going to move and she was going to get on the end of it. It was like, literally, we're going to be here for 15 minutes. We were there for 5 and I just got on the horn.
Mm.
It actually felt really good. And I was like, Mum rage, let's go. And I just got on that horn and then she eventually moved and I was like, that actually felt good. That's fucked up. But I was like, oh, people wonder why mums get rage in the pickup line. It's because I had to go around 3 times. Don't block up the line because you can't get in. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You're just like, I'm so off my head at this point because probably all the, not a lot of self-care and pent up anger and inner rage boils over.
And then when there's an opportunity to be semi, what's the word I'm looking for?
Like it's appropriate to let a bit out.
Yeah, or they're unlikely to get out of their car and come and,
yeah, exactly.
They're unlikely
anonymous.
Know who you are. Yes,
yeah.
Anonymity is the word I was looking
yes.
for. And I've definitely, in fact, just disabled my Facebook account today because I found myself having a few of those kind of reactions. And that's not the person I actually am. And I don't want to. Yeah, it can come out in ways that make, there's a lot of guilt and shame around the sort of reactions that we can have to situations because of all of that you're just holding on, and then it comes out and you're like, oh, person I am a nice person. It just came out that way.
Totally. And it's interesting because I looked at the Facebook. I didn't write back to any of the people. I just let them sit on there. And the reason I didn't was because I thought, I reckon these mums are just done. I reckon this isn't about me. I don't think they're actually upset or they're wanting to champion some cause. I think they probably have had an appointment. They've been gaslit by their GP. They're pissed off with their husband or their partner probably. They're fucked off with the NDIS or whatever it is. And they've just got the shit. So if I write back, I don't think... Do you know what I mean? I was like, this is not going to go anywhere. So I just left it. But because I did think, I reckon these poor women are just a bit pissed off with life, which, fuck, I was on the horn yesterday at my kid's school. So I was like, I get it.
Yeah. Yeah.
But anyway, thank you so much. It's been such a great episode. Is there anything that you want to share before we head off?
I don't think so. Not in particular. Thank you for having me. It's been nice to chat about it all.
Excellent.
Being recorded from a lot of
people. Oh, man, I actually just started using it for my own personal interest at least the first 20 minutes. I was like, oh, I just want to ask my own questions for a moment.
Yeah, it's nice to find other people with the same sort of similar experiences. And I feel like it's not talked about a lot out in the open. So it is really nice to find other people you can talk to about it.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for sharing your experience, honestly. And I thought you gave some great examples, and the autistic ADHD experience is something that we're getting to now, having the first season just wrapped up. The second season is going to be a lot more around neurodivergence, in particular ADHD and autism. Reason being is because autism is talked about even less than ADHD, although sometimes it's talked about probably not in the right way. At the moment, I still feel like it's better to have it talked about in the wrong way than not talked about at all. And I think we're in the path of people talking about it. For a while there, I think it was just taboo. People don't talk about it. I think now it's getting thrown around more, as ADHD is definitely thrown around a lot now. I think autism is starting to get there. But when it's thrown around wrong, I don't want to right and wrong it, but when it's thrown around in an incorrect way or a way that's borderline offensive, I think what can happen is that people on Facebook can call people out, and it does provide an educational element. to it where maybe it's not written in the right way, but for people reading it, they're like, I actually would have said that too. I didn't know that was offensive.
Mm.
In some ways, social media can be helpful, and it can be helpful to see that written in the wrong way and have some of those keyboard warriors pull people into place, because it was only for me recently that I realized that ASD was not really an appropriate term for autism. And that was really, like, I say ASD all the time and I had absolutely no idea. So for anyone listening, people with autism, some people, not everybody, believe that autism is like a different way of seeing the world. It's not a disorder. It's a difference. So some people with autism believe that ASD, which is autism spectrum disorder, is like derogatory, like there's something wrong with them. It's a disorder. It's a disease. Like, you shouldn't have it. Get rid of it. Cure it. Whereas it's a difference in the brain that makes you see things differently. Is that correct with you, Bessie? I don't want to talk for you.
Yeah, I think so. I'm obviously still very early on in my journey as well, and still very much learning everything. And language is fluid and is constantly changing. It's really hard to keep up with. But yeah, it's hard because people say it's our superpower, but to me, it hasn't been a superpower. It's been something that's really affected my life and really impacted it and has caused a lot of difficulty for me. So it is definitely not a superpower to me. And whether it's a disorder or not, it's really hard to say. You have to, I don't know. It's
real potato. Who fucking knows at this point? But I try and keep on top of what's offensive and the way that people are looking at it. Yeah. However, I don't actually, although when it was explained to me, disorder versus difference, that really stuck with me. I was like, okay, I actually get that. Mm. And yeah, I don't want to say to somebody that they have a disorder if they're autistic.
I don't, it's all about what other people are comfortable with themselves. I think I'm not going to project my values onto someone else if they want to call it a disorder for themselves, if that gives them some sort of validation or understanding, that's to them. But I will generally go with what is the accepted and understood to be non-offensive term at the time. I think I'm autistic is probably the one that most people go with, because it is a very much a part of me. So I'm not a person with autism. I'm an autistic person because it is who I am. But I think everyone is a bit different.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you so much, Bessie. It's been a pleasure. I really appreciated your time.
Thank you.
The key message here is you are not alone. Thank you for listening. Jump over and join the Facebook community. Submit a review on Spotify or Apple. Follow stories on Instagram. Share an episode with a friend. Everything you do matters and helps spread the word about what ADHD in females looks like.